Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films Drive Away Dolls, Lovely, Dark, and Deep, and Occupied City.
Whatever else you say about today's movie scene, it certainly is varied. I mean, I guess that's always true of movies to one extent or another. But the three films I would like to talk about today are really, really different from one another. And I would like to start, for some reason, with the one which I think is the most sort of frivolous and trivial and least interesting of the three, although it's not entirely without merit. And that is a movie called Drive Away Dolls. And this was made by Ethan Coen. Now, not so long ago, just a very few years, actually, Ethan Coen was, along with his brother Joel, one of the Coen brothers. And they made lots and lots of movies. And some of them were frivolous and trivial, in my opinion. But some of them were really, really excellent. They were a really gifted team. But in recent years, they have drifted apart, at least in filmmaking terms. Joel has done some work on his own. And now Ethan has been doing work on his own, and this is the latest to emerge from a single Coen brother, and it's called Drive Away Dolls, and it refers to something I wasn't even sure that these sort of things still existed. Very long time since I've thought about this, actually, but the idea of drive away cars, where instead of renting a car, you want to go somewhere, you can go to one of these agencies, and they do still exist. Where you agree to drive a car to a particular destination, and that doesn't cost you anything, and the person whose car it is gets the car to that destination. So that's the way it works. And yes, those agencies do still exist. I've checked on it, although the whole thing seems sort of retro to me. In any case, the movie is sort of retro because it seems to take place in about 1999, which actually is when Ethan Coen and his wife Tricia Cook wrote the screenplay for this. So this movie has been on the slow burner for about 25 years. But that's when the movie takes place, back in 1999. And it's really important, and I think inevitable, that the movie take place a long time ago, because if there were such things as GPS and tracking devices and so forth, this movie would not exist. The story could never take place. So it has to exist back before the era of modern GPS-type communications. So anyway, here's what we've got here. We've got, by the way, this is a lesbian comedy, so that's what we're in for here, a road movie, because it takes place partly on the highways. But mainly, it's a comedy and is about these two women whose names are Jamie and Suki. And, I said that wrong. Jamie and Marion. Suki's another character. So anyway, the very beginning of the movie, it takes place, starts off in Philadelphia. One of them has a terrible breakup with her girlfriend, and then the two who are not a couple actually decide to go on this trip together for various reasons. And so, in order to save money and make this all possible, they go to a drive-away agency, and they get a car and they start to drive down. They're driving down to Tallahassee, Florida, which is where one of them has a relative who she was going to visit anyway. And so, okay, they're going to head down there. However, what they don't know, and what the drive-away guy doesn't know either, the guy who has the agency, is that some criminals have secreted a crucially important suitcase in the trunk of this car, and that's why the car has to get to Tallahassee really fast. But these two women have no idea that this thing is there, and they have absolutely no idea what the worth of the whole thing is going to be. So they start off on their trip, and they have all kinds of adventures along the way, a number of which are sexual, some of which are not sexual. Of course, this pair of women, these pair of lesbians who have not been a couple at the beginning of the movie, of course they end up a couple by the end of the movie. That's inevitable. This is also a rom-com, and that's the way those things work. But along the way, they have various adventures. For one thing, they are being tracked, again, not with any sort of cell phone technology, but just being tracked by sort of phone calls and guessing a lot by these two criminals who are after that suitcase in the trunk. So again, all kinds of ridiculous adventures take place along the way. So there's a couple of performances in the movie I really like. Geraldine Viswanathan is very, very good as Marion. I think that Margaret Qualley is not quite so interesting as Jamie, but they're perfectly good performances. That's one of the good things about the movie. I really like one of the secondary performances, the guy who runs the driveway agency, whose name is Curly. He is played by Bill Camp, my favorite performance in the whole movie, although it's very, very brief, unfortunately. And then there are these crooks who are tracking our two main characters, guys named Arliss and Flint, played by Joey Slotnick and C.J. Wilson, and they're mildly amusing to watch. One of the things this movie does is it has these two crooks who are basically secondary characters but important ones in the movie, constantly bickering with each other and yelling at each other. And this brings me back now to the Ocean's movies by Steven Soderbergh, which are no great masterpieces in themselves, but are, I think, quite a bit better than Drive Away Dolls. Anyway, Drive Away Dolls is a frivolous comedy, an occasionally slightly amusing comedy. It didn't say much to me, and I don't think it's going to do a whole lot to enhance Ethan Coen's reputation as a solo director. That said, there are a few amusing moments along the way, and people who are in the mood for a lively lesbian comedy might very well find it more enjoyable than I did. It's under an hour and a half long, so that's a good thing about it. Now I would like to talk about the movie which I am most enthusiastic about this week. It is a horror movie called Lovely, Dark, and Deep, and it is the first feature directed by Teresa Sutherland. And it's basically an American movie, although it was filmed in Portugal. So this is a movie about a forest ranger. You don't run across those every day in the movies. And she is fairly new on the job, and it's going to be interesting to see what she encounters. And there, you know, we know we're in some adventure here because this is, after all, a horror movie. It's a suspense movie. And fairly early into the film, we realize that she has more on her mind, this young forest ranger, more on her mind. Her name, by the way, is Lennon, L-E-N-N-O-N, like John Lennon. She has more on her mind than simply being out in the wilderness and earning some money. It turns out that years ago, her sister disappeared in a wilderness area, a public park. And ever since, Lennon has been determined to find out what happened to her sister. She's been desperate to search for her sister. So what more logical thing could she do than to take a job as a forest ranger, one of the people who does search for missing people, disappeared people in the forests? And so that's her real motivation in being here. So we have a fairly interesting setup for this movie, and we have a definitely fascinating, interesting main character, Lennon. She's a really, really interesting character, played beautifully by Georgina Campbell. Now, I have to mention that last year, Georgina Campbell starred in a movie called Barbarian, which I think may well have been last year's very best horror movie. And now she is starring in Lovely, Dark, and Deep, which I think is probably going to turn out to be the very best horror movie of 2024, even though this is still a very young year. It's a marvelous, marvelous performance, but her performance does not anchor the entire movie. Other things go on as well. First of all, there's other forest rangers who she works with. She has a supervisor, and there's another ranger more experienced than she is, and they have various encounters over the course of the movie. But fairly early in the film, when Lennon is out there searching for her vanished sister while just doing her job as a forest ranger, she starts to run into some fairly mysterious events. A guy shows up at her door of her little cabin out in the middle of nowhere, banging on the door, "You have to let me in." And then it turns out that, is he some sort of a menace himself, or is he just somebody who is being menaced and needs her help? She has other encounters like that, not many, but a few over the course of the movie. But mainly, Lennon starts to get strangely, oddly, and weirdly disoriented. She sometimes finds herself in a totally different place from where she expected to be. All of a sudden, at one point, she uses her walkie-talkie and she gets in touch with one of her colleagues. "Wait a minute, I can't possibly be here. I was way, way, way in this other spot, and now suddenly I'm here." So she is getting disorienting. And what I think is most fascinating about this movie, Lovely, Dark, and Deep, is that it is a genuinely disorienting experience for the viewer. Now, that may not sound inviting, but one of the things horror movies are supposed to do is just to be horrific. This film, Lovely, Dark, and Deep has occasional moments of sort of old-fashioned horror movie shock. You know, bloody people suddenly show up with blood all over them or some sort of horrible deformation or something. And I think those are the least effective moments of the movie. Mainly we have here a movie where we actually share in the experience of Lennon. We often have trouble figuring out where we are, just what is going on, just where are we going to be going next and where have we just been. And this, I think, is fascinating. Moreover, this is done not only through sort of screenplay manipulations, it's done very much through cinema. The way things are filmed, the way things are framed, perhaps above all, the way things are edited. Absolutely fascinating exercise in real cinematic technique in creating a genuinely, for me at least, disorienting experience. So my gosh, I think that this is a really terrific debut for the writer-director Teresa Sutherland. This is really, really impressive work from her. And it's another marvelous performance by Georgina Campbell. And above all, it's a movie which if you really sit there and watch it and let it take you in and get immersed by it, I think you will find it an absolutely fascinating movie. So anybody interested in horror movies, especially comparatively subtle horror movies, should definitely check out Lovely, Dark, and Deep. Of course, the title comes from an enormously famous and very great Robert Frost poem. But this is in its way as a sort of a poetic movie. Mainly it's a horror movie, but yeah, I'll go with that. It's a poetic horror movie and a very scary one. I really, really had a good time watching it. Lovely, Dark, and Deep, my recommendation for the week. Although the next movie I want to talk about, very different from those, is also one I really want to recommend. Now, one of the good things about Drive Away Dolls is that it's short. It's under an hour and a half long. One of the things about the movie I'm going to talk about now, Occupied City, is that it's long. It's 4 hours and 10 minutes long. So, okay, be ready for that when you step into the Occupied City. It is the latest movie by Steve McQueen, a very gifted and very politically savvy filmmaker whose movies like, his recent film series, Small Axe, also his movie Hunger very much, and some of his other work are very, very politically minded, and certainly Occupied City is very politically minded too. Now, it's based on a book written by his wife, who is a filmmaker and an author. Her name is Bianca Stigter. And just recently, I think about 2 or 3 years ago, she made a movie called, or excuse me, she was involved in a movie called 3 Minutes, A Lengthening, which was based on the idea of taking a small bit of footage, film footage, that came from a Jewish-Polish town before the Holocaust began. And it takes this bit of footage, 3 minutes approximately, and it expands this piece of footage into a more than an hour-long study and analysis, which brings us into all kinds of fascinating material related to the Holocaust. So that was a very short movie that came partly from the filmmaker and writer Bianca Stigter. Now we are having a movie by her husband, Steve McQueen, which is very, very long, and it also is based on Stigter's work. So what it is we have on the soundtrack Melanie Hyams dictating, or I should say narrating, a long series of stories from the Holocaust, from what went on in the Netherlands during the Holocaust, particularly in Amsterdam in the Netherlands during the Holocaust. So what we have on the soundtrack is one anecdote after another. Sometimes these are about horrors that took place, sometimes they're about Jewish resistance, but they are obviously all really very much about the Holocaust. In the meanwhile, in the images of the film, we are seeing present-day Amsterdam and present-day Amsterdam during the recent COVID crisis. So it is pretty clear, although he doesn't say so outright, that Steve McQueen is not at all happy about how a lot of people in the modern world handled the coronavirus crisis. And he doesn't really come out and say that, though. We have to sort of intuit that from the sort of images that he shows. And a lot of the images is just life going on pretty much seems as normal in Amsterdam during the coronavirus crisis. But apparently that is one of the things on his mind. But for me, this is not so much a movie about present-day Amsterdam, not so much a movie about the coronavirus crisis and the lockdown and so forth and so on. It is very much a movie about the Holocaust. And by contrasting these anecdotes, I shouldn't call them that exactly, but these recounted memories of the Holocaust on the soundtrack with images of any present-day modern city just carries a very forceful message. How much do we remember the Holocaust? How much do we relate it to the way our lives are now? Yes, during the coronavirus lockdowns and so forth, but also just to the way we live our lives nowadays in the modern world. So the Holocaust as a crisis was just insanely farther, larger, greater, vaster than the crisis of the coronavirus pandemic. It's interesting to contrast these two things and put them together. But mainly, I see Occupied City as an intelligent and engrossing movie about the Holocaust. It held me almost through its entire 4-hour and 10-minute length, and I highly, highly recommend it for people interested in documentaries, for people interested in history, and for people interested in how history relates to the modern world. Occupied City, a long movie, a demanding movie, but a lot of ways, a terrific movie. I think maybe the best one Steve McQueen has so far made. So that is my extremely diversified story this week.
For which we thank you. As ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films Drive Away Dolls, Lovely Dark and Deep, and Occupied City.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.